This is going to be our big break, Matt. I just know it. Donnie beamed with excitement as he sat down with his business partner and childhood friend Matt in their film production company's office. Matt was an expert cameraman and Donnie was a brilliant film editor. They had both worked previously with large studios, but recently decided to go into business with one another. Their company was called For the Love of the Craft LLC, or Lovecraft, as they liked to refer to it. However, what had at first seemed like an exciting adventure quickly became a struggle to survive. It was difficult for them to find work as an independent studio, and the bills were piling up. Matt eyed his friend warily and said, "Whoa, calm down. What are you talking about?" He knew that his friend had a tendency to get too excited, and then underthink ideas. Donnie said, "I just got off the phone with a representative for, wait for it, Jim Camberson. He said they wanted to talk to us about filming a documentary he's making about searching for some lost city at the bottom of the ocean or whatever." Matt furrowed his brow as he replied, "Jim Camberson? You mean the guy who directed The Exterminator, Extraterrestrials, and Chasm? That Jim Camberson?" Donnie clapped his hands excitedly and said, "Yeah, apparently he's making a new documentary and he wants to work with a small, independent production company to make it. Not many people know this, but in addition to the fact that he's a world-class director, he's also a deep-sea explorer. He's even a National Geographic explorer in residence. I don't know what that means, but it sounds important."
Yeah, it does, Matt said thoughtfully.
"But how did he hear about us?" Donnie winced and said, "Oh, come on, Matt. You've been in the film industry for years. You know we told all our contacts when we decided to go off on our own. Most of them just wished us luck. But it seems like someone took us seriously, and now we've got Jim Camberson himself calling us up to hire us."
"You mean Jim Camberson's representative? No doubt our price point is pretty attractive as well, considering we're in the bargain bin as far as filmmakers go."
"Whatever, look. It's like I said, this could be our big break. Got a meeting with him next week to discuss the details and sign the contract."
I don't know, Donnie. This is moving pretty quickly. We should think about it."
"What's there to think about? When a big shot like Jim Camberson tells you that he wants to work with you, well then you just do it.
Besides, what else do we have going on?"
"We need this, Matt."
Matt thought for a moment and said,
Okay,
Donnie. I'm on board. Let's just hope this works out well."
"Oh, it's gonna work out really well, my friend. I guarantee it,"
Donnie said as he smiled brightly. Matt inwardly shuddered. He hated it when Donnie guaranteed anything. As that almost always meant something was about to go wrong. Donnie and Matt showed up 15 minutes early to their meeting with Jim Camberson. His office was in a huge, gleaming building in the nicest part of the city. Camberson's assistant immediately ushered them into a large meeting room with an oval desk. Around the desk sat a petite young woman, a large older man, and James Camberson himself, tall and lanky with salt-and-pepper-colored hair. When they entered, Camberson leapt out of his chair and marched up to them, holding out his hand and saying in a booming voice,
"Hello, boys! Thank you so much for taking the time to meet with me. I really do appreciate you stopping by."
The other two people stood up as well, and Camberson introduced them. He introduced the woman first and said,
"This is Dr. Petra Maxwell, PhD. She's a marine biologist and is acting as my primary scientific advisor for the project. We met through our work with National Geographic."
Dr. Petra shook hands with Matt and Donnie, giving them both a quick smile and saying, "Good to meet you."
Then he introduced the man and said, "And this is Captain William Billingsley, or Captain Bill. He's a British Navy veteran who started his own maritime trading company years ago. He'll be lending us his sailing expertise and the use of his ship, the Vigilant."
Dr. Bill shook hands with Matt and Donnie as well, crushing them with his massive paw and saying, "Cheers."
"Excellent,"
Camberson said, as each person took a seat around the desk.
"Let's get down to business. The project entails combining my knowledge of storytelling with my passion for
Donnie interrupted him and said,
"Excuse me, Mr. Camberson, sir. Please forgive me, but could you say how you heard about us? We're not exactly a household name like you are."
Camberson smiled like a Cheshire cat and said,
"Oh, I actually know about you both for quite some time through the film industry. Always been very impressed by your work. You could even call me a fan.
Matt's jaw dropped, and Donnie's eyebrows shot up in surprise. The very notion that a huge industry player like Camberson knew who they were was shocking. But to hear him describe himself as a fan was beyond belief. Matt was spellbound, but Donnie thought it was fishy. It was as if he was saying exactly what they wanted to hear. Camberson continued.
You boys recently started your own company, didn't you? When I found out about that, I found it to be quite serendipitous, as I've been waiting for just the right film crew to come along and make my dream a reality. This project has been years in the making, and now it's about to happen. I can barely contain myself. As I was saying, the project entails combining my knowledge of storytelling with my passion for exploration. Now, let me ask you a question. Have either of you ever heard of the Lost City of Relay? Have either of you heard of the Lost City of Relay?
Matt and Donnie shook their heads.
Relay is a city that is believed to have once existed on a small island on the South Pacific Ocean. It was built thousands of years ago by an unknown civilization that was completely shut off from the outside world. Most historians think that it doesn't even exist, that it's a fairy tale, like Atlantis. But I believe it's real.
As he said this, Camberson reached into the inner pocket of his sport coat and took out a weathered-looking piece of paper. One that was folded into thirds. He carefully unfolded it, then pressed it flat against the table and slid it towards Matt and Donnie. As they looked it over, Matt noticed the paper contained indecipherable handwriting, a small drawing at the bottom that resembled a man with the head of an octopus and the wings of a bat, sitting on some kind of platform.
Several years ago, I discovered a cache of notes written at the end of the 19th century by a person named George Gamal Angel. He was a professor of Semitic languages at Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island, and he was an expert in the topic of ancient and lost civilizations. This is one of his notes that indicates the existence of the lost city, Relay. After I learned of it, the city became somewhat of an obsession for me. I've since tracked down many other primary and secondary sources which support the notion that it is a real place. As I'm sure you know, I'm not just a movie director, but I'm also an explorer, particularly of deep-sea environments. The late professor's notes indicated that Relay sits at the bottom of the South Pacific, and I intend to find it. I require a film crew to record the expedition for posterity, and hopefully for profit as well. I'll be using a submersible designed by Dr. Petra here. It's equipped with cutting-edge sound and video equipment that will be recording as I search for the city. I'd like you to film every moment of the expedition leading up to that point. I'd also like you to conduct interviews of myself, Dr. Petra, and Captain Bill. Then, I'd like you to combine all of the audio and video footage together into a documentary.
Where exactly in the South Pacific is that lost city supposed to be? That's Matt.
At a location called Point Nemo. It's as far from civilization as you could possibly be in the ocean, replied Cameron.
Dr. Petra spoke up and said, It's so far from society that if the International Space Station happened to pass overhead while we were there, we'd be closer to the astronauts than any other human being on the planet. Matt shifted uncomfortably in his seat. This was starting to sound like a much bigger endeavor than he'd counted on. He asked,
How long will the whole project last?
Captain Bill answered this time and said,
We'll start by flying out to Auckland, New Zealand, where my ship is waiting for us to disembark from there. It will then take us about a month or so of sailing to reach Point Nemo. Once Mr. Camberson has found this lost city, which will take an undetermined amount of time,
it will then take about 45 days to return to land as we sail against the current.
Matt stared at him in disbelief. He hadn't been prepared to confront the prospect of such a long voyage. Camberson said,
In order for us to get started, I need you boys to sign this contract. It's mostly legal mumbo-jumbo that you don't need to concern yourselves with. Mainly it says that you're entering into this project of your own volition, and that you indemnify me, my company, and the rest of my crew in the event of any unfortunate accidents that may occur. But I've been planning this for years, and I've considered every contingency. I guarantee a successful outcome for all.
Matt shuddered inwardly again. There was that word, one that he hated. Guarantee.
Before I show you the contract, I must insist that the terms are non-negotiable, Camberson said. However, you can take comfort in the fact that should our little film make any money, you'll each receive favorable royalties, and though this goes without saying, you'll have the prestige of the Camberson name all over one of your first projects. Camberson slid the contract across the table. Donnie reached for it, but Matt took it before he could get to it. Matt immediately flipped to the part where it described their upfront compensations. He was crushed to see that it was for a ridiculously low amount. Camberson wasn't lying about the royalties, though. They would be very lucrative if the film made any money. However, Matt was no fool. He knew the chances of the film being profitable were slim, and that this was clearly a pet project Camberson was pursuing purely out of vanity. It wasn't a serious business investment for him at all. The prestige of Camberson's name did indeed have value, though. But prestige doesn't pay the bills. It dawned on Matt that Camberson chose them not because of their reputation, because he knew they were desperate. This project was going to take them to one of the most desolate locations on the planet for nearly 3 months at the pay grade of an intern. He wanted to tear up the contract and bolt for the door. He knew Donnie would never forgive him if he did. Matt began to say, "I think we need to discuss..." But Donnie interrupted him and said excitedly, "We'll do it!" He then grabbed the contract out of Matt's hands, took a pen out of his pocket, and signed it without reading a word. Matt looked at him in shock and anger. However, Donnie merely pushed the contract over to him, held out the pen, and pointed at the part where Matt was supposed to sign. Matt's shoulders slumped in defeat, and he snatched the pen out of Donnie's hands. Then he scribbled a sloppy signature on the contract and spiked the pen on the table in frustration. The deal was made. Matt yawned as he panned his camera across the wharf while workers loaded the Vigilant with supplies. It was still early in the morning, and the sun had started to peek out from the horizon. They had arrived in New Zealand the day before, and Camberson wanted to get out into the water as soon as possible. Matt stopped the camera as Captain Bill came into view in the foreground with his ship in the background. Captain held a steaming cup of coffee and stood still as Donnie pinned a small microphone on his jacket. Through the lens, Matt could see Camberson's submersible, dubbed the Deep Sea Discovery, being loaded into the ship's hull with a small crane. Donnie said, "Okay, Captain, I'm going to ask you a few questions and you can just say whatever answer enters your mind in the moment. We want this to be very spontaneous, so don't worry about it sounding perfect. Later, we're going to edit my voice out so this interview will appear to be a monologue by you. How does that sound?"
"Aye,"
replied the captain as he sipped his coffee.
"Great,"
said Donnie, and then he turned to Matt and said,
"Are we rolling?"
Matt gave him a thumbs up, and Donnie stepped out of view of the camera and asked,
"What are we doing right now, Captain?"
With a frustrated grunt, the captain replied,
"Are you daft? We're loading up the ship. What does it bloody look like we're doing?"
Donnie winced and asked,
"I mean, how are we preparing for the trip?"
Captain grumbled.
"We're taking 6 months' worth of supplies, including foodstuffs, water and toiletries, as well as medical supplies.
Heaven forbid one of you pretty boys breaks a fingernail out there."
Matt and Donnie looked at each other with frustration. None of this was going to work for the documentary. Donnie decided to try a different approach.
"You seem a bit frustrated, Captain. Are you nervous for the trip?"
Captain sneered sarcastically and said,
"I've got nothing to be nervous about, lad. However, I must say that as far as sea voyages go, this one's already all bollocks up."
"Why do you say that?"
"Well, for one thing,
we've got a red sunshine."
"It's never a good sign. A red sunshine is a bad omen indeed. It suggests blood on the horizon."
Matt panned his camera over to the sunrise to reveal that it did indeed appear to be a blood red. Then he panned back to the captain, who continued,
"Another thing is I don't like the look of your camera boy here. Looks like a Jonas to me. You know what I mean by a Jonas? It's a person who brings bad luck at sea."
Matt started to say something in response, but shut his mouth.
"And one more thing,"
said the captain.
"It's downright awful luck to start a voyage on a Friday. But here we are. On a Friday. About to risk our lives at sea and find some fairy tale city that doesn't even exist. It's as if the stars are aligned against us."
With this, the captain's voice rose and he began to tremble with anger. He continued,
"I tried explaining this to our esteemed benefactor and our fearless leader, but did he listen to me? Of course not. Well, Let me tell you something, bucko. I've only been sailing for nearly 50 years, and one thing I know is you don't bloody well start a bloody voyage at sea on a bloody Friday with a bloody red sunshine with a bloody Jonas on board, and if I didn't need the bloody money so bad...
I'd have told that pompous arse to shove it.
The captain was shouting now. Several of the workers had turned to see what the commotion was. He shook so violently the lid of his coffee popped off and piping hot coffee spilled all over his hand. He shouted and dropped the cup to the ground. The remaining coffee splashed directly into his eye, and he screamed in pain and doubled over, covering his face with his hands. Donnie rushed to the captain's side and said, "Captain Bill, you all right?"
"The stars,"
moaned the captain.
"The stars were aligned against us. We're doomed."
After leaning in close to check his eye, Donnie detected the smell of rum on the captain's breath. He was drunk. Matt retched violently into the trash can next to his bed in the small, cramped cabin he shared with Donnie. They had been at sea for only a week before they were beset by vicious storms that had already lasted for 3 days with no signs of letting up. The constant motion created by waves crashing against their vessel gave Matt horrific seasickness. Meanwhile, Captain Bill was constantly at the rudder, cursing up a storm himself, trying to cut a path to safety. He now wore an eye patch after scalding his eyeball during his breakdown at the wharf. There was certainly a pirate joke to be made about it somewhere, and nobody was laughing. Another thing that wasn't funny was that the storm had damaged or destroyed nearly half their supplies. Several crates had gone overboard after being originally secured on the ship's bow to make room in the hull for Camberson's submersible. They weren't sure if they had enough supplies to make it to Point Nemo and back. They'd already began rationing food and water. Everyone tried to convince Camberson to turn back, but he wouldn't hear of it. Dr. Petra was also not handling the situation well. She'd holed herself up in the makeshift science lab she created in the bowels of the ship's hull. In it, she'd stocked various devices and equipment to help her manage the deep-sea discovery during the expedition. However, she hadn't left the lab since the storm began. And Donnie wondered if she was even eating. The one person who didn't seem put off by the storm was Camberson, whose enthusiasm of the voyage only seemed to increase every time another wave smashed against the hull of the Vigilant. Another week passed, and the storm had subsided. Captain Bill managed to find a more favorable course by dipping south and picking up momentum from the prevailing winds to make up for lost time. His humor improved substantially. He started cracking jokes about his eye patch, wondering aloud where his parrot was, and beginning and ending every sentence by saying, "Arr." Matt's condition improved as well. Despite merciless teasing from Captain Bill about being a landlubber in need of his sea legs, he even felt well enough to help Donnie interview Dr. Petra, and they met her in her science lab in the ship's hull. Once Donnie pinned a microphone to her shirt, Matt started to roll camera, and they were ready to begin.
"Let's start by asking about the submersible, Dr. Petra. Could you please tell us a bit about it?"
Dr. Petra replied. "I'd love to. The deep sea discovery is the product of nearly 7 years of work. I like to think of it as a vertical torpedo, because it's designed to reach the bottom of the ocean as quickly as possible and then rocket back up to the surface just as rapidly. It's nearly 8 meters tall and 3.5 meters wide, with the most sophisticated battery-powered wireless audio and visual equipment available. With it, we'll be able to see and hear everything Mr. Camberson sees and hears, and we'll have a full 360-degree view around the submersible as well. We'll also be able to communicate with him through a microphone. Feedback will come through these displays and speakers that I've set up inside the Vigilance Hall." Dr. Petra waved her arms around towards a small command center behind her that had several screens and various metal cabinets and computers.
"You anticipate that we'll run across any strange or interesting sea life?"
Dr. Petra chuckled, and she shook her head. "Unfortunately, no. This region is devoid of nutrients that would be required to sustain life. This expedition will be more like going to the moon than visiting an ocean reef. My interest as a marine biologist is purely in testing the performance of the submersible that I designed. I've only ever seen it in action in controlled environments before, so I'm looking forward to seeing how it performs out there in the wild. Speaking of the moon, one thing I do anticipate running across on the ocean floor is spaceship wreckage.
You see, space agencies of various governments, including the US, China, and Russia, use this region to, for lack of a better term, dump their old spacecraft once their missions are completed. They simply navigate their ships to re-enter the ship's atmosphere at a trajectory so that they'll fall in or around Point Nemo. But the reason is because this area's remoteness. It doesn't really have anything to do with our expedition, but, I find it fascinating nonetheless.
This is starting to sound more like a science fiction story than a deep sea adventure.
Yes, I suppose.
And what of the lost city of Relay? You think we'll find any evidence of that?
Dr. Petra hesitantly then said, That's Mr. Camberson's department, not mine. He's been researching this lost city for more than a decade. He's a bit eccentric, but he's also highly intelligent, and as you know, extremely successful. I doubt he'd come all this way unless he truly believed there was something down there. I hope we do find some evidence. I think we might. But I have no idea what that could be.
Donnie and Matt opened the hatch and stepped out into the ship's bow. It was nearly 1 a.m. The night sky was awash with stars. They were surrounded on one side by pitch darkness, and pale moonlight spilled across the ship, providing slight illumination. The sound of waves gently lapping against the hull was all they could hear.
Wow. Seems like whole galaxies are visible out there,
Donnie said.
See if you can get a good shot of the sky, Matt. Make some excellent B-roll.
Not just for the documentary, but for our archives as well.
Matt hoisted the camera up and began pointing it at several constellations in the sky. Donnie directed him to capture images of the Southern Cross, Capricorn, Sagittarius. But then Matt noticed one that seemed out of place.
Matt. See the constellation over there, does it?
Does that one seem weird to you?
Yeah. Yeah, real weird. It's like all the stars in that cluster are slightly bigger than the others. They all have this otherworldly green tint. I've never really seen anything like that.
Me neither.
Starting to feel a little creeped out. Let's head back down.
Just as they turned to leave, Captain Bill stumbled out from behind them, holding a nearly empty bottle of rum. He removed his eye patch, and Matt and Donnie could see a horrific burn scar in his eye in the moonlight. Captain Bill slurred his words. He said,
Ahoy, mateys.
How just where do you think you're going?
Donnie cringed and said,
Captain Bill, we were just capturing some footage of the night sky. Didn't realize that you were there.
Captain Bill hiccuped and said,
Oh yeah, I've been here the whole time.
But we finished, and we're going to leave now.
Not so fast, gents,
said Captain Bill.
Your stars over there.
Captain Bill pointed at the strange constellation Matt and Donnie had just been discussing.
That's not a good sign for us. Not at all.
Why's that, Matt?
Why's that?
Captain Bill replied in a mocking tone.
Because those stars are abnormal. Sailed all over every ocean's bloody planet, all throughout every season of the year, and I've never seen anything like that bloody constellation. Those stars are aligned against us. Aligned against us, I say.
Captain Bill took a mighty swig and downed the last bit of rum from his bottle. Then he stood there, tottering back and forth, muttering to himself under his breath.
Hey, you're drunk, Captain Bill. You should go back to bed,
Donnie said. The captain said nothing in response. He continued to stand, still, muttering. As they passed by him on their way to the hatch, they noticed the glint. A large Bowie knife strapped to his belt. To be included.